In an abandoned underground city at the Spanish coast near Malaga, I found a USB stick containing 300 random movies, from arthouse to weird, from obscure to notorious. Now, in lockdown, it is time to watch and discuss them all in an international podcast project. Two Turks and a German, two filmmakers and a mystery man. Welcome to Mysterium Pictorum.
Welcome, welcome to Mysterium Pictorum episode 22. That's not a very special one. I got so used to having special numbers announced. Like, we had episode 20, which is like a round one. Then we had episode 21. Our podcast was all grown up in the US. But 22, that's not even an exciting birthday. What did you do on your 22nd birthday, Jan?
It was so long ago. I have no idea.
Now that you're 64, You've completely forgotten. Nissan, do you remember?
I don't remember my 22nd birthday too.
See, that's how unspecial 22
that's so
is.
So sad.
So I'm sorry, dear listeners, but this is a really unspecial episode. But whatever.
Do you remember your 22nd birthday, Lars?
I really, really don't. But I don't remember many of my birthdays anyway. Like, I don't know. Jaren, who are you?
I'm Jaren, and that's all you need to know.
Oh my God. Did you see how I mixed up the order here, Nissan?
Yes.
Who are you?
Yeah. I was irritated that you asked Jaren.
Yes. So not feminist of you, Lars.
Yeah, I think after 21 episodes of aggressive feminism, it's time to insert the necessary dose of sexism into this film podcast. Because, you know, I'm
that's the way we can get more audience.
Exactly. I'm a contributor on the subreddit True Film. And my threads frequently get closed because they discuss misogyny in movies. film geeks really don't like feminism. And who can blame them? What has feminism ever done for film geeks? So I am the new resident sexist here. I'm an actor. I studied acting. I'm a professional. So I'm sure I will relish this part. So let's see. Let's all be very excited for the exciting things to come. Nissan, who are you?
I'm
see, the podcast is better already.
He's not letting me talk anymore.
I'm such a great method actor.
So are you having some fun with this?
Okay, great, thank you. Moving on.
So my name is Nissan. I'm obviously not 22 anymore, and I'm an actress, and and we are, me and Lars, my hubby, making films together. And this year we're working on a theater project right now, which is fun. And you can find out more about it on our TikTok pages.
All right. I am Lars Henriks, writer, director, and actor from Hamburg, Germany. You can find out everything about me on www.larshenriks.de. And I'm also on TikTok. It's at Lars Henriks. I'm on Instagram, but not very active because I don't like Instagram. It's at Lars Henriks OF, at Lars Henriks OF. And I, yesterday, on a whim, I rejoined Twitter, felt cute, might delete later. It's Lars Henriks or at Henriks Lars. I'm really not sure about that one. I know when we started out with Mysterium Pictorum, I had just quit all social media and I was so proud. But now I'm thoroughly hooked again.
Yeah, it only took you, 16 weeks to go to TikTok and then many more.
Yeah. TikTok opened the floodgates for everything else to pour in.
Yes, it was kind of embarrassing at first, but there's one big thing we should not talk about because otherwise we will jinx it. Something very important happened.
Oh, yes. Something very, very big happened because I rejoined Instagram.
So, let's not jinx it, but we're gonna tell you soon.
Yeah, I can't wait to, to talk about that.
Stay tuned for next episode.
Yeah, further down the road, maybe around episode 50, I'm going to start talking about this. This is truly magnificent. And
so for that, it's good. Yeah, we rejoined Instagram.
Yeah. Let's all hope it works out. But yeah, potentially. This is gigantic. We have this new category, mailbag. I keep asking our audience for iTunes reviews. And dear audience, please do write us an iTunes review, preferably a 5-star one. We provide great entertainment. We provide you with information about obscure movies and with this fun little mystery about this mysterious USB stick. Yeah. Please write us an iTunes review. And I had always been whining about how there were no iTunes reviews. And then I found out how to check iTunes reviews in other countries. That's how I found Paula's review last time in Great Britain. So there are iTunes reviews. Thank you guys so much for writing them, especially Paula Blair from Audio Visual Cultures. Check out her podcast. It's great. I looked into the iTunes reviews in Spain, you guys, because we keep wondering about who compiled the USB stick. And there actually was an iTunes review on the on Spanish iTunes. But I have to disappoint you right away. It's in German.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that happened, but I guess like Torox is like a it is like a German colony in
I just wanted to say we are so stupid. After a borderline decision, we moved to Spain and then we were broke and we lived with German pensioners.
With old Germans.
German colonial village in Spain. That's where we found the stick. So maybe it belonged to a German.
Well, the iTunes review is not a 5-star one. I have to tell you, it's not good. It says, translated to English, it says, they are talking about stuff they don't understand. Greetings from Torox Costa.
No way,
yeah,
it's
that's
from Torox.
Exactly the point.
Yeah. So
I love it. So it's an old man.
I don't know.
He's mad because of Godard.
Maybe, probably.
Or maybe that's the guy with the USB stick.
I don't know.
The guy?
Wouldn't it say it's my USB stick? I think it's just someone. Maybe I mentioned Torox in the show notes somewhere, and someone looked like on Google or somewhere for podcasts about Torox, and then found us randomly and got a bit grumpy.
I like the idea that's his USB stick, and he's kind of mad that we stole it from him.
All right, I don't know. Maybe Guy, sorry, I didn't write down your name. I just wrote down your message. if you hear this and it's your USB stick, please do get in touch. You can send us a voice message via Anchor. That would be great because this is an audio medium. You know, it's an audio format, so it would be great to play some audio. So dear Torox guy, please get in touch via Anchor.
I wonder which episodes you listen to. I mean, speaking of Paula, we had even on an episode someone who had an expertise on the subject. Which podcasters do that?
Yeah, we know stuff about the stuff we're talking about. Yaren, do you have a message for our mysterious hater from Spain?
I'm just happy they're involved.
All right. Moving on to the movie after discussing our hater briefly. How did everyone like the movie? Yaren does not like to start these rounds. So Nisan, how did you like it?
I liked it. I watched the trailer like months ago. And I thought, I'm going to love this movie. And then Yaren warned us. So I had great expectations because I thought, so I'm going to hate it. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. For me, the story where it got interesting started way too late. So the first half of it, I think I was bored and annoyed, but then they had this twist and I liked it.
Yeah, okay. Jaren, how did you like it?
Yeah, I mean, it was way better than I remembered, to be honest. First time I watched, I had high expectations because it was one of those really hyped movies in one of the festivals I'm following. So you know how they hype the movies in the festival pamphlets and stuff. They write these amazingly interesting sounding sentences on them and then they're just usually letdowns, which was the case when I first saw it. But this time, I don't know. I'm at the same space as Nissan, I think. Didn't really hate it. Didn't like it. It was a bit confusing at times to, how do you say it? It wasn't engaging into the story. At most times, it was just rambling over. But overall, I think it was a good experience. People should watch it.
Yeah. After hating so many of the films we've watched lately, I'm very happy to be able to say I kind of loved it. Definitely, it was good that Jaren, you told us about it because I would have expected the film to be something it wasn't. It was good to know about the rapier stuff beforehand because this way, I don't know, it didn't really bother me.
The trigger warning is always good.
Yeah. I think to me it heightened the experience. Like I might have been disgruntled at some of the contents hadn't I known that that's what the film is about, and I think it was all handled really well. And there's a lot to love here, and let's go through this. But before that, how did we watch it? I think in our case, this is boring. This time we watched it in the home theater, and I can only recommend to watch this on a big screen because it's very colorful. It looks fantastic. It felt to me, especially in the beginning, like a theater performance, like on a stage. So the closer you can get to that, I say, is the way you should experience this film. Jaren, what?
Yeah, I think you're right, because the first time I watched it, it was on a laptop screen, but this time it was on TV. You appreciate better how they frame the scenes and actually spend some time on designing them as well.
Yeah, I think so too. This is probably not a laptop movie, even though it might seem like one. Like there are films that don't lose anything. I think this one does. Okay. Let me go through the story real quick. So, much like Flash, this film starts with a naked person who sleeps. In our case, it's not a naked guy. It's a naked chick. A naked chick sleeps. She's a transgressive artist. She then wakes up in her yellow room and has a monologue. It is theater, you guys. And while she does, her dead sister plays the piano and she dances around until her assistant arrives. And her assistant tells her she wants to be a whore. The assistant is an older woman. The younger artist starts to subjugate her assistant right away. Some people arrive for a photo shoot, including two lesbians with strap-ons and mohawk haircuts. And the assistant gets humiliated, abused, and raped. It's not pretty. It goes to levels that are really, truly uncomfortable to watch. But then somebody says, cut, and we found out it's all a movie. There's a whole film crew right next to the set, and all the people involved are actresses. Then we get a nice reversal of the roles, like the artist who is humiliating her devout assistant is suddenly like the young actress is actually the one who gets humiliated by the older actress all the time. Humiliated and abused. Then there's the director who's very, very pervy behind the scenes and wants to rehearse some sex scene with her. It's not good. And then they start over again. This time we see this scene play out the same way it did the first time, but for us as the audience, everything has changed. You see the cracks in the in the surface level of the young actress's performance, and then the film stops bothering about logic. Flashbacks start to appear, flashbacks into the younger woman's history and her reasons to go into porn. There are namely her horny parents and her dead sister. Then we see how she got cast for the part. We get treated to a nice casting scene. Then we see how she met the older woman and how this meeting got worked into the screenplay of the film they are shooting. Here it gets really kind of tragic and deep, and we're towards the end of the movie. When it really gets completely absurd and paint is strewn all over the yellow floor, and she tries to escape her parents, who are engaged in the act of making love, and she tries to get out and screams that there is no way out for her, no way out for women. Yeah, and thus ends this movie. Did I forget anything, you guys?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, there's one thing that I'm not sure if it's worth mentioning, but like the very first 2 seconds of the movie is showing like a city hall type building with cop cars passing by. Is that referenced again? I don't know. What's it about?
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, no, I had to rewind. I didn't even realize at the beginning, so I had to rewind. But I mean, it's not mentioned again, or any flashbacks have that type of thing.
Like from the beginning, I mainly remember how she pulled up her panties when she was lying there in bed.
Yeah, two seconds before then.
Bottom up. Okay, I seem to have missed that. And then her frequent walks to the toilet, but that's all.
And through the film, she's always trying to puke.
Yeah. But she never quite manages to do so, even though the film threatens to have her puke right into the camera.
Yes, that was a great shot, actually. I was so scared. It felt like I'm in a German state theater again and will get something wet into my face.
I felt like I was in theater like most of the time. This film is Sion Sono's reflection on feminism. I read him say in an interview that he was thinking about how women are portrayed in Japanese films and in his films more specifically, and how he wasn't happy with that and how he wanted to start to change that. And I think like this film discusses very frankly the role the role of women in society and art, I think. And specifically, it's about how the sexual revolution, the cry for sexual freedom, has done nothing for women, right? That's to me what this film is about. Am I absurdly off at there?
I think at this point it would be good to have someone like Paula that knows their shit when it comes to especially Japanese cinema. And I think they were mentioning Roman movies.
Yeah. I have prepared a bit about mm-hmm. those Pinku films, I think. They are Pinku. Called, but I'm not sure. Maybe Roman and Pinku are two different things. But anyway, Nissan.
No, I agree. I'm not sure if that was the only message, but at the end she had like this monologue with free from what, you know.
Or free how? What is my freedom?
Yeah, and I was thinking about a scene. There was a scene in Before Sunrise, I think. Yaron, you and I watched that one. Mm-hmm. And she said to him, I mean, of course, feminism is about equal rights, and that's it. I mean, that's not it, but that's the message. But she was talking about this specific thing about hookup culture and blah. And she said, as a joke, men came up with feminism. So women can, you know, be able to have sex with them all the time and then think, well, I did something for me. That was to free myself from the oppression.
That's like the
still being objectified.
The generation of the 68 student revolution, like the left-wing boomers.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Boomer man feminism.
Well, I'm a feminist. My father was like that. He was creeping on every woman, and he was saying, "No, women have the rights to have sex with me all the time."
Yeah, I think
maybe they don't want you to hit on them all the time, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I feel like that's what this film is largely about too. That it's like, okay, so we grant women the freedom to fuck us whenever we want.
Yes, yes, exactly.
But how is that freedom? I mean, I'm a feminist, you guys.
It's a feminist utopia.
Okay, so this project came about because Japan apparently has this tradition of even artistically revered softcore porn films. Roman movies, I've read that word. I've also once read and heard the word pinku. If there is a distinction between those genres, then I can't make it out, but whatever. So there's these Japanese softcore porn, even though that grossly misrepresents the whole thing. But there is this tradition of Japanese softcore porn. Cheaply produced movies that were very exploitative of all things sexual, but the Japanese censorship forbids filmmakers from, showing many things too graphically. So they always had to find workarounds, and apparently somehow there has developed quite an artistic little genre that doesn't really have an analogy in any other country's cinema. And that appears to have been mainly a thing from the 70s. 60s and 70s, and this project was about, it's a bit like Tarantino and Rodriguez coming together for Grindhouse and saying, oh, there were these films that have been shown back to back, and they have been produced cheaply and in all these ways, and we're going to emulate that and bring that to the cinemas. This seems to have been the same thought, but about softcore porn. Five directors were picked. I don't know who the other four are, but Sion Sono was one of them. Five directors were picked, and they all had to make a film that adheres to the rules of this genre. The rules are: they have 1 week to shoot the whole thing. There must be a sex scene every 10 minutes. The budget is low. I don't know how high exactly, but there's apparently a low budget. The film
looked pretty high for me.
Well, it looked fantastic, but also it looked like somebody did a lot with a low budget. Like most of it was shot in one location that just looked fantastic, stuff like that. So a very good filmmaker, I guess, with limited resources. The film had to be around 60 minutes. This is another thing that really goes for anti-porno. It's only 75 minutes long. Mm-hmm. I love a movie that doesn't overstay his its welcome. Movies are male, you guys. I really nailed the sexism in this episode. But
they kind of are, aren't they?
Movies are male and for men. So around 60 minutes. It has to be shot on 16 or 35 millimeter. I don't know if they did that, if that was part of this, but whatever. Film geeks probably freak out about the celluloid. And yes, then there's some censorship stuff that I'm not 100% certain on, but they had you know the scene in Austin Powers when he walks around naked in his hotel room and there's always something conveniently placed in front of his penis?
I've never watched Austin Powers.
Yaren, you, a connoisseur of great movies, do you remember that scene in Austin Powers?
Not exactly, but I remember the same from Simpsons. So.
Okay, I read that this kind of stuff was invented apparently in Japanese softcore porn because they weren't allowed to show stuff. I mean, there was full frontal nudity in this, so I don't know what the censorship rules were that they didn't break. But I noticed that frequently, there would be like shimmering lights that gave the film a certain look, and stuff like that was apparently often done to hide certain parts of the anatomy of the actors. So I don't know. I'm not sure about the censorship stuff because apart from penetration, I guess we've seen it all in this film, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of sexual scenes were always on your face, especially at the end.
Yeah, exactly. But okay. So we didn't see like an open vagina and no erect penis. So that but that's just the rules of softcore porn, right? That's,
maybe no penis even.
Yeah, probably. There was not
one about it.
I mean, there were two naked men in this, but we didn't see their penis at all. That's right. We did have our fair share of dick last week. And this week made up for that with no dick, but tons of
boobs.
All right.
But I'm going to say something feminist right now. There was not sex scenes every 10 minutes because rape scenes don't count as a sex scene.
True. Very interesting rape scene in concept, actually, because...
Which one? The forest one?
The forest one, yes, because she gave her full consent when it started and then took it back. And
I think she took it back when he said, "I'm gonna rape you."
Yeah, exactly. but that's there was a heated discussion about if that is rape or not in the US like 5 years ago, the whole mattress girl scandal. I don't know if you've followed that, but there was something on campus and it was about taking back consent during the act. And I liked that to see that in a film because it struck me as progressive, even though it shouldn't be.
No means no.
Exactly. No matter when it's said, everyone. I'm the resident feminist.
She didn't even say
everyone is allowed to sleep with me. There's no slut shaming around my penis. You can also send me nudes.
She didn't even said no to the actual act. She said, "Be gentle." She said, "Like, no, don't rape me. Have sex with me."
But he didn't want to.
No, he wanted to rape her.
Yeah. So yeah, Yalin, have you seen a Japanese softcore film before?
No, unfortunately, no.
Nissan, you also have no experience with the genre?
No, I no.
Well, I do. actually,
okay.
I think this is a thing. Like, I first encountered this mode of Japanese storytelling.
Now we're gonna talk about stuff we know
in the form of manga, I guess. There was a manga magazine in Germany marketed to young teenagers and children called Banzai. That was the place where, for the first time in Germany, Naruto was published, or Hunter x Hunter. I think even One Piece, stuff like that, started there for Germans. And they had one series which was my favorite, my personal favorite when I was 10 and reading that magazine. It's called DNA Squared. And that's like a fun comedy sci-fi story about a guy who gets in lots and lots of semi-sexual situations with girls. His problem is he always throws up when he sees a naked girl, which is unfortunate because it sort of spoils the moment. But then he gets shot with a DNA projectile and turns into the mega playboy. He looks like a super Saiyajin from Dragon Ball Z then. Like he physically transforms and is not only are all women then very horny for him, but also he's super strong and can fight. And it's
it reminds me of American Horror Story season 3 somehow. There was this witch girl and her superpower was every time when she had sex with someone, he died.
Yeah.
And then there was this frat boys and they raped her witch friend. And then she went and her witch friend tortured them. And then she went to the hospital and raped them so they can die.
Remember
that?
But actually what it should remind you of is our film Leon Must Die, because in DNA Squared he gets hit by this projectile which is shot by a girl from the future.
Uh-huh.
She travels back in time from the future because the future is a horrible place, because 100 years ago that mega playboy has lived and fathered so many children that now there are too many people in the world. So she gets sent back in time to shoot the mega playboy, but sadly she shoots the mega playboy with a projectile that she has engineered to genetically make her own dream guy, and by that she makes him the mega playboy.
Oh.
It's all her fault. And then she has to fix it. And it's amazing. It's a great story. And one day I will ask the writer of that story if I can officially turn it into a movie. But I sort of did already with Leon Must Die. But yeah, no, I've then seen a film like this on the at the Derby Film Festival, Nissan, when we were there, showing Leon Must Die, actually. So full circle on that point. I forget what it was called, but it was also very, very pretentious and very intellectual. Like there was a sex scene in which the two fuckers would say intellectual things to each other, and it escalated into them both just screaming "Noam Chomsky, Noam Chomsky." it was fantastic. Then there was like the fifth or sixth rape scene played for laughs, and I kind of got into a bad mood and left the theater. But up until then, I think this genre is fun. It's also very rapey. So if you do not get into a bad mood when watching rape scenes, then first of all, what's wrong with you? And second of all, this might be a genre for you. But you guys, I want to get you talking. Now you know the rules. And you've all played our famous game Pitchcock, in which you get presented with certain things that have to be part of your pitch. Mm-hmm. And you have 3 minutes to make up a pitch. Nissan, you go first. If you were to make, if you were asked to make a film in 1 week with a sex scene every 10 minutes, low budget, let's say 10,000 euros, 60 minutes runtime or a bit more than that, and no erect penises in opened vaginas. But apart from that, you had total freedom. What would be the story that you would tell?
Okay, I would make a feminist thing out of it, because we rarely see that on films or on series. There's this woman, and she's also doing a journalistic job about it. She's a journalist, and her topics are always female orgasm, sex, blah blah. And she wants to make and it starts like she explains her experiment, and she wants to make a found footage film with consent of the men. They don't know for what. She dates like 10 different men. Not date, but like one night stand or fuckboy date. And they have to be like really different from different professions, from different, you know, cultures. I don't mean it by ethnicity, culture. I mean, that can be of course too, but I mean, I don't know, like a prude bank guy, a punk, guy from the street, or an artist with a cocaine problem, stuff like that. You know, 10 really different men. And the twist is, in the end, they all don't know where the clitoris is, or that it is necessary.
And that's the main message.
That's the main message. And they all and she shows that every 10 minutes.
Fantastic.
You can do it like with one actress and 10 different actors. They would do it for free. And it's found footage, you know? So it's going to be cheap. And if I make her flat kind of, if I make a nice set design like the guy in Antiporno, then it's going to be a nice fun footage.
So basically 10 sex scenes in which the clitoris is ignored.
Yes.
So basically just 10 basic porn scenes.
Yes, 10 basic sex scenes from every movie we know. So, yeah.
All right. Jaren, I think you can top that. Come on, what's your pitch?
I have a simpler pitch, which takes the budget into account as well, so it might be better. So I would just get, I don't know, 3 or 4 people as the cameraman, what do you call that, sound and all that stuff, and just go to a music festival for a week, preferably in Germany, because your festivals are great, they last long. And just, I would be the only actor. So they would just follow me around, hooking up with weird people for a week. Or by the end of the day 6, we would go edit. And that's the movie. The story would reveal itself.
All right. A documentary. 2 documentaries, actually. All right, guys.
More of a mockumentary.
Yeah, okay. Mockumentary, documentary, I don't have anything like that here. I have three fantasy films.
For 10,000 euros?
Well, yeah, you guys, I mean, look at Leon Must Die, look at Bear Kittens, which we did with 5,000 euros.
Yeah.
So with 10,000 euros, definitely we could pull off something great. All right. My first pitch is about, I don't know if you guys know about the
No, wait. You don't get to have multiple pitches.
Oh, come on. I have great... Okay.
Choose one.
Okay, yeah, okay, choose the best one.
Guys, I'm going to compromise here. I'm going to choose two. So the first one is back in the day, you know, in the good old days when in Egypt people would still pray to cats. Have I ever talked about this on this podcast, Yaren? Have I talked about why Egyptians prayed to cats?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, why did they worship cats? That there's a simple reason for that.
Because of the orgies.
Because of the cat orgies. The Egyptians were very impressed with cats' capacities to have giant orgies, and the Egyptian cat cult was determined to emulate those orgies, to imitate them.
I've never seen a cat orgy.
But you live in Istanbul. You heard them. Right? I've never
seen it. Yeah, but it's not an orgy. It's usually two cats fucking and then a bunch of male cats around waiting for their turn.
Yeah, and maybe they don't invite you because you're not cool enough. So Egyptian cats, they had these massive orgies. And Egyptian cat worshippers would join them. And this is about the Egyptian cat cult.
So pervy.
Yeah, wait. This is fantastic. So there's this pure girl from the rural areas in ancient Egypt, you know, and she comes to the big city, the big pyramid city. I don't know what the ancient Egyptian cities were called, but she gets there, you know, maybe it's Cleopatra's time. I don't know when the cat cult was active, but let's say it's Cleopatra's time. Yeah. And this rural girl, comes to Cleopatra city. And she becomes like a temple maiden of Cleopatra's, actually. And Cleopatra, of course, is praying to the cat gods. And then our pure protagonist starts being part of these culty orgies, and there's conspiracies, you know. Mark Antony is running around and fucking around behind Cleopatra's back, and our pure girl from the country, she transforms over the movie. Like at first she's a bit taken aback by the whole debauchery, and in the end she's the cat goddess's main priestess and the de facto ruler over Egypt.
Euros in a week.
Horny, hungry Egyptians. All right, but yeah, the low budget version would be this. We this story. So there's a young woman. She's a student, and she discovers she has a special vagina power. Her vagina eats up men she sleeps with, and those are then stored inside of her vagina, which is kind of an Alice Wonderland thingy. And the story is like we see her first time, and she absorbs the guy, and then we see her fuck around and absorb many other guys, and then we see the guys chilling in the vagina wonderland and wondering.
Yeah, I mean, how is it a punishment?
Well, they are trapped in like this wonderland. Let me be disgusting. There's like mushroom growth and there's magical creatures, and it's very dangerous in that vagina. Okay, and they are trapped in there, not with their penises, like full body trapped. You know,
once
they are
a month rains blood.
Yeah, it's like an awesome version of Under the Skin. You know, I mean, Under the Skin is quite awesome, but this is more awesome because we. we stage it in like on like a theater stage. It looks amazing and colorful and fun. Yeah. And then at some point, our hungry vagina girl, she gets a girlfriend who does cunnilingus on her, and then she has her first orgasm, and orgasming, she splurts out all these men who had been trapped in there. And so it's beautiful and tragic, because in the end she has had her orgasm, but of course giving birth to all these full grown men, it has killed her.
Disgusting. What's wrong with you?
Oh, I thought they were gonna join the action.
No, okay, she doesn't die, you're right. They splurt out, everybody is happy.
A happy ending.
Everybody is happy, and in the end they just have a giant gangbang with two women.
Mix your both ideas. At the end they get their Egyptian cat orgy.
Exactly. It's fantastic. Give me the orgies. Yaren, have you watched One Cut of the Dead?
No.
Okay, I'm not going to spoil it for you then. Watch it, because I wanted to talk about why it is similar to this film, but I won't now. Watch One Cut of the Dead. What are you doing with your life? Why haven't you watched it?
I've been traveling a lot these days.
The beginning of this piece of avant-garde filmmaking had me thinking about a very different piece of avant-garde writing. And that is Yasmina Reza's play. In German, it's called Kunst. So I'm guessing it's called art in English. Yaren, are you familiar with this writer?
No idea.
Have you seen Carnage by Roman Polanski?
Nope.
All right. That's based on a play of hers. But I wouldn't say it's worth watching Polanski's work.
No.
But yeah, so she writes these contained satirical pieces. Her play Art was a favorite of the headmaster of our drama school. And her play Art is about three men. One of them has bought a canvas that is blank. And they are discussing why and how that is art, and why it is it has been worth so much money. And in this satirical piece, Reza makes fun of male stereotypes, especially in the 90s, like male yuppies. She makes fun of men. That's what the play is about. And this headmaster would also always take this play and stage it with three women, whereby completely missing the point. And that annoyed the author so much that at some point she sued him. To stop it. He hasn't stopped, Yasmina. He hasn't stopped. He's doing that all the time. It's his classic. When you go to that drama school at some point and you have a vagina, and he notices at some point, he will first ask you if you've been raped by your uncle.
No, he will say...
He will tell you you've been raped by your uncle.
He will tell you. He will say stuff like, I can feel it. You were raped, right? I have the superpower.
So he will say, I smell your vagina. You've been raped by your uncle. Please be in my staging of Art.
Sometimes it's the grandfather. Sometimes it's the father. He's always
so
crazy.
Basically, he's then gonna use you in that staging of this art thing. One staging or another of that play is always going on at that school. it's funny. And well, that's a thing then in his version with three women, all in one place, and it's all about a thing that is strikingly in one color, like the room in Antiporno, you know. And during the first third of the film, before it was revealed that it's all a movie in a movie, we kept saying, you know what, Bruno would love this. He would kick Art in the bin, and he would have this done by every new acting student that comes through his school. They would all have to...
See if they're minors or so.
Yeah, they would all have to undress, and they would have to humiliate each other, and this would be what they would play all the time. And by the way, this might sound like a thing that is not okay in a professional environment, especially involving minors, but we're talking about a theater here, and this is national and worldwide standard for acting schools. So
let's cancel acting schools. schools.
Yeah, don't go to art schools. They are a scam. But whatever. The first third of this is the wet dream of every left wing boomer theater director or art school headmaster. They would lap this up. This would be in every theater across the country.
The yelling and the humiliating each other.
Yeah, the naked
yelling. The naked cringe yelling.
Why is it that art house is always so concerned with boobs, Jaren?
I mean, it attracts attention. Focuses the story on something at least, because they're always obscure.
So these filmmakers, they sit back and say, I think my film is boring. I'm not telling a compelling story. Mm-hmm. How do I fix it? Boobs.
Or they just want to see boobs.
Or in Andy Warhol's case, dick. But like, that's such a lazy answer. I'm actually not saying this that about this film. Like, it starts out like that, and then it has a twist, turning the whole thing on its head and commenting on that kind of thing. So no blame goes in this case to Sion Sono, but. I mean, Nissan, you said he tortured you a bit too long with that part.
Yeah, definitely. I was keep thinking about my drama school back then. At the first 20 minutes? Was it 30 minutes? But I loved the twist, and I also loved that when they revealed it, that the cringe yelling was on purpose. Because I loved it in the end when they acted the scene, this exact very same scene again in good. So I was relieved that he did it on purpose to make a point.
All right, time for the film term of the week. This week, I thought about the following thing. This isn't the first film in this in which this occurs. Actually, this occurs in many a film. The more sexually explicit, the more this kind of thing occurs. You guys, you know what? I'm not gonna beat around it. I'm a bit embarrassed for my term. My term is clitoris denying art. So there is Holocaust denial, there's climate change denial, there is clitoris denial. What I mean by that is art that assumes that A, the clitoris, what's that? That doesn't exist. Or B, that just denies that just ignores the function of the clitoris and is occupied with the mystery of the female orgasm, which gets triggered by.
By poems
or just stroking
plastic dicks,
yeah. and all these funny ideas that these films have, and I think clitoris denying art is the standard, actually.
I love that term.
Jaren, what do you think about that term?
Yeah, it sounds great, actually.
All right, now that we've done that, Jaren, what's your favorite quote from this movie?
Ooh, I have a long one this time. The main character, Kyoko, says this in her long rant when during the first photo shoot. She says, "Men don't sit when they piss. We always sit on the toilet. They piss standing up. Men even look down on the toilets."
That's deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, our new category. I don't know if you guys have thought about this at all. Why is this here? How does it fit into the collection? And why did the angry, ranty German who left us that bad review put it on the USB drive with the other films?
He definitely likes boobs, but he also has a thing for dicks are okay too, because... No, we had only one film in this 22 films.
You know what? Going by the most of the films and what we've said about their sexual politics, that were on this drive, this appears to be something that whoever compiled the collection has only seen like the first third of, and hasn't seen the twist, and hasn't seen the film then making fun of that exact mode of storytelling. But maybe it's just another boomer thing, and he didn't understand that it was making fun of him. Yeah. No, that's a bad story. That's bad storytelling. Jaren, why is this here? Come on, give me something better.
Okay, so, I mean, as I said, this movie was super hyped at the time when it first came out. Well, that might be the reason. But more interestingly, if they also intended to watch these in alphabetical order as we do, this is a great transition from watching Flash. Like, you see so many dicks, it's good to see the same amount of boobs just to balance things up.
That's true. That's true. They make a good double feature, Flash and this mm-hmm. one.
We could we could think about it if all the movies we watched so far, like in order, could make good double features, because we also had this Tarkovsky movie, and right after that we watched a documentary about Tarkovsky.
But it's a random alphabetical order that goes by the name of mm-hmm. the torrented files. So I doubt that there's anything in the order.
Okay, so this movie is similar to the other movies, edgy. No, they were not all edgy.
I mean, I will say this. We haven't had a lot of conventional storytelling. We haven't had many conventional films. I thought this about Flash, that could be something that would be put on in an art gallery on some wall. This one, too, worked on a very visual level. It reminded me of other art forms, of theater, stuff like that. It's all... many of these films feel ritualistic in a way. You know what I mean? That's interesting. So all films that maybe would lead themselves to something other or something more than consumption in a cinema. You know, like they could be part of an event that isn't cinema, like an art exhibition. The 964 Pinocchio film, mm-hmm. the director mm-hmm. puts that on for people to dance to. Mm-hmm. So there's a ritual that is not cinema.
Or we said that even in our very first episode mm-hmm. about the Pomegranates movie, that yeah. it could be also just put it on the, you know, on the wall.
Yeah, right.
But what about the cat movie, and what about the documentary?
Maybe the documentary is just to provide some info about Parajanov and Tarkovsky. Mm-hmm. Maybe something about their biographies was important to whoever compiled this disc, but I don't know what it would be. There wasn't much information.
Maybe he compiled from a DVD. You know, sometimes you have these torrent files from DVDs,
mm-hmm.
and maybe he downloaded the movie, he also downloaded the DVD extra, not on purpose or something like that.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're right about Bob. So far, Bob seems to be the odd one out. I think most of the others support the theory of this being about films that are more than films, or that can be consumed in a way that isn't cinema. Like, let's call them ritualistic. Yeah? Ritualistic mm-hmm. films. But yeah, Bob doesn't fit. Maybe Bob is the key to all of this. I don't know. Yaren, what do you think?
Maybe Bob is for the breaks.
When you're coming down from your trip, or you have a hangover the next day and you want to watch something dumb, then Bob is perfect, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, maybe that's the mixture. Maybe we have like mm-hmm. ritualistic films for some kind of debauched party, and mm-hmm. then dumb films to even them out the next day.
I mean, it also fits into like how, if you think about Bob's storyline, it's about a heroin addict kicking the addiction and then, you know, rejoining the society. So after partying, you might feel that way too.
Yeah, yeah, right. All right. Let's keep this theory in mind. I mean, Torox is a kind of party town. Ranty German, please get back to us if we're close. All right. That's it for this week. Yaren, is there anything left to say from your end?
I think that's it. We did a good job at summarizing this movie, even though it didn't make much sense.
I would still reiterate what you said in the beginning. I would definitely recommend this. Mm-hmm. People should watch it, mm-hmm. right? It's a solid movie.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, great. You guys, going by the theory about most of these films being meant for ritual, and I'm looking at them, you guys. There's the Alice film, a ghost story, the Bela Tarr ones. I think we're close.
But like, what kind of depressed party is that? If you have a ghost story, the Bellatar ones, the elephant still waiting still. What?
I mean, it's a creepy party in those catacombs under Torrance, like in that abandoned underground city. It's creepy, you guys. It's creepy. It stays creepy. Maybe Renty German don't get back to us because
maybe this USB is an initiation thing. So when we finish it, actually, they're going to reach out.
Oh,
you guys, I think we deserve it. Please reach out. Let us be part of your world spanning conspiracy.
Yeah, maybe it's an experiment. They left many of those sticks in different places.
To see who makes a podcast about them. Okay. Now you guys stop making sense. No, but next week we're gonna, I guess, watch one of the dumb ones. We're gonna watch Arthur and Merlin from 2015, which looks to be like a cheap, cheesy fantasy thing.
TV movie, basically.
Yeah. I mean, after all the art, I'm looking forward to this, but that's gonna be very different.
And the director only has two movies.
Oh, really? Oh, I haven't looked into it.
Oh, not even two. The second one is coming soon. It's on pre-production.
He did get a second one made. Yeah, then,
well, it's again Arthur and Merlin, The Fire of Balor.
have you looked it up on IMDb?
Yeah.
And does it fare well? Do people love it?
I don't think so.
All right. Let's see if we love it. I'm looking forward to it. As I said, so much art, so much depression. Let's watch some King Arthur. I'm ready for those come down hangover films.
Me too.
All right. So you guys, as per usual, thank you so much for listening. Leave us an iTunes review. Those would really help. Unless you're a ranty German. Give us 5 stars at least.
How many stars did you give us to us, actually?
1.
Oh. That hurts.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So please, you guys, even that out. Give us 5-star reviews.
No, 1 star is better than none star.
That's probably true. All right. That's it for today. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.